Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 492. And we're rounding the year off with my TV shows of the year. But not just my TV shows of the year. I've got John Harris and Joel Grove from the Dream Factory podcast. John Harris also runs the Distraction Pieces social media and makes all them little quote videos. And if he picks a quote from himself for this week's episode... Oh, I'm going to be an angry boy. No, I'm not. John's great. I'm a big fan of their podcast and of them as humans, and I wanted to get them on to talk about some of the great TV shows that they've been this year, because as a lot of you know, I always do my films of the year. I don't always do a TV shows of the year, but I think we're spoilt for choice these days. So I thought I'd get them on. Anyway, let's just get into the chat. We're brought to you as ever by speechdevelopmentrecords.com. If you've got some Christmas money, go and spend it there, or sling a quid or two over at patreon.com/ScroobiusPip, or head to twitch.tv/ScroobiusPipYo to just hang out and enjoy stuff for free and become a nice, friendly member of the community. Let's get into the episode. There's been loads of TV I've loved this year. Oh, actually, I also went on Dream Factory, which came out last week. I'm the Christmas guest special on Dream Factory, which you'll hear all about, which is amazing, and on Smashing Sundays, which is one of my favourite podcasts, Beth Granville and Lucy Pinder. And I couldn't have had more fun on either. So check both of those out if you're in this kind of gap where a lot of podcasts aren't putting out podcasts. Give them a listen. But for now, give this a listen. This is episode 492 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Joel Grove and John Harris from the Dream Factory podcast. This is our TV of the year. 2022. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. I'm joined today by Joel and John. How are you guys?
Fantabulous.
Yeah, really good. Really good. Excited. Honoured.
Yeah.
On the show.
I'm excited to have you both here.
Like, it's a long time listener, first time caller.
Same, because I listen to your podcast all the time.
Thank you.
Thank you so
and
much.
And it's the Dream Factory podcast. And you talk about movies and you talk about fake movies. And every now and then, a little whisper of TV comes up. And it feels like you feel you have to move along quite quickly because it's not a TV podcast. So my knowledge of hearing a few things you've both mentioned on there told me we've got some similar crossover, but also excitingly, probably some stuff that doesn't crossover. And I think that's kind of key, because doing a TV shows of the year recording with all of us agreeing on the three good TV shows of the year wouldn't be that helpful.
You need a hive mind for TV now, right? Because there's 15 streaming platforms and like a show a week. Yeah.
It's everywhere. I talked to a mutual friend, Brett Goldstein, about this, about the fact that, like, it's amazing to have a mate in a successful TV show, but what people don't take into account fully is that's a successful TV show on Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And that's really hard because, again, I think Apple TV's got some great stuff, but having limited experience in acting myself, everything I've ever done, like stuff that's on the BBC, stuff that's on NBC, the first thing people say is it on Netflix? Is it going to be on Netflix? Is it available on... If it's not on Netflix, no one gives a fuck. So things like Apple and Disney, like there's one show in particular, which is on Disney for us, I want to talk about, because it's probably been my actual show of the year. But to have a successful show on any of these streaming platforms outside of Netflix is a struggle.
There's so many options, and it's that thing where I think back in the old days, people were like, oh, satellite TV is so expensive. And then Netflix came along and you were like, oh, this is, you know, a tenner. And then now you have 14 different streaming services and you're paying more than you ever were every month to watch
TV.
No,
John, you have 14.
Yeah,
aren't you, like, John's on Peacock and Paramount. Like, he's got the full gamut.
I'm still on Quibi.
I genuinely think I'm just slightly older than I wish I was because I've got Sky, and it's because we had Sky as a kid and it seems, well, I should have Sky and this is what I watch things on. Everyone I know is like, even 5 years younger, is like, why would you pay that stupid amount? Why haven't you got Now and Netflix and this and that? And yeah, I feel like an old man because I'm kind of stuck to. I've got, yeah, but I've got some things I recorded on there a couple of years ago that I'm going to get around to watching at some point, and they're not on the streamers. And yeah,
when I was like 11 or something, my family first got Sky, and it was like we'd made it. It was a really big deal when we first got Sky. Just
yeah,
because it was you, at the time it was like
same,
five channels.
Same, because my aunt had Sky for ages, and we didn't have it at all. And then when basically Sky came around shortly before my parents got divorced. And then to keep curry in favour, my dad continued to pay for the Sky after he moved out. As a little pitting your parents against each other. So we managed to have Sky the whole time. It was a treat. That's how it comes together.
I feel like the first thing I had was maybe like an NTL box.
Right.
It was a long time before I had Sky. My parents were going for the...
I don't know what that is either.
We were on the alternative scene of...
NTL.
Yeah, like NTL became like
National Television
Virgin or BT or something. Like it's like a, you know how like Virgin is the rival to Sky.
Yeah.
I think they tried and tested every rival box. You know, we were like big on Blue Yonder email addresses and stuff in that house. They're very much on the alternative end of the internet. But I think there was some, I feel like getting stuff like Cartoon Network for the first time was such a major deal. Like when there was kids TV available
all
after
day.
5 o'clock and after
any time you
it
want.
Was insane. Yeah. So,
and the Cartoon Network would get weird the later it went on. It'd still pretty much be kid friendly, but it'd be mainly stone students that are enjoying Dexter's Lab and all these things, Ren and Stimpy, all that. Well, before we get on to kind of throw in forward some TV shows each, tell everyone a little bit about your podcast, because you've been around a while, you had a big gap. Kind of give us the elevator pitch and tell us what the deal is.
John, do you want to do the thing?
Oh, no. We describe it as the world's greatest user-generated movie creation podcast. If you can find another one, then fair enough. Maybe we'll have to take back the claim as the world's greatest. So basically, listeners send in pun-based movie ideas, mostly pun-based movie ideas, but movie ideas, like you say, for films that don't exist. Joel and I try and sort of flesh them out into movies, and then a lot of the time it sort of goes off into tangents about Joel's weird childhood in Kent.
I guess, listeners are kind of pitching us films. We're like two high-flying Hollywood execs, and listeners are pitching us movies. Pip, you're a big contributor to the show. Always, it's a mark of quality. Yours are a high-quality submission.
I mean, you say listeners are pitching you films. Have you ever regretted describing it like that? For example, when this one listener repeatedly sends you full scripts, because they're astounding. They're wonderful.
Yeah, we've got a very, very, very committed listener who said, like, he started off, I feel like it started off, because we've been doing it about maybe 5 or 6 years. It started off as like a paragraph.
Yeah.
And we'd get really excited about his emails. And now I don't know. I feel like maybe he believes that we have some sort of sway in the film industry, because he's just sending us like spec scripts now. They're just so long. They're like a 10-page.
He's called Muscles Tom, and he works on a muscle farm in Wales. And he sends us full scripts. And they're so long, we have to split them across episodes.
Yeah. Like, I have images of him like at sea with a typewriter bashing these scripts out. Because I don't really know what a muscle farm looks like.
Nah.
But fair play to him. That's the kind of commitment you want from a listener, right?
Yeah, 100%. It's much needed. But I love finding podcasts that do have that interactivity. And the annoying thing about podcasts sometimes is you go away thinking of things that you'd want to say if you were in that conversation. Mm. Does that make sense? I have loads. Yes. Like, as John will know, I have it with hardcore listening all the time. I'll come away like really annoyed. It's like, I wish I could have rung in and corrected them on all the things they got wrong. But the beauty of your podcast is you can go away, come up with ideas, and then submit them. Come up with things you would have wanted to say, and then tweet you guys or Instagram or whatever else and go, here you go, here's a good one. So yeah, I love it, guys. Good work on another wonderful year.
Thank you very much. And it's very short. We are one of the world's shortest podcasts at about 25 minutes an episode. So
yeah,
but we record for hours. The editing process is brutal.
I recently, this is a big story, on Remembrance Sunday, it wasn't on a Sunday. There was another day that was a Remembrance thing. I don't know how Remembrance Days work in this country, but I was walking up the hill with headphones on, listening to your podcast. Your podcast had just finished and Chatterbix was just starting, and I was whistling your lovely little theme tune. And then I went into the Chatterbox theme tune. And, no, it wasn't. It was Random Movie Generator. Another one of David Earl's ones. Just as I crested the hill and realised there was about 50 people having a minute's silence as some prick is walking up the hill happily whistling.
I thought you were going to say a bloke with a bugle went from the last post into the Dream Factory theme.
Yeah, it just continued it on. I love
all
it.
All of a sudden you're leading a marching band up the hill. They're all playing the theme.
Yeah. Well, we're here to talk about TV shows of the year. And again, regular listeners will know, I do my films of the year on my own and I spend all year making note of every film and really going through how it's going to be. And I don't normally do a TV shows of the year, but I think we're in really good times for TV. And I think it's maybe because there's so many platforms and so many people at home and stuff like that. But yeah, I thought it'd be good to have a chat with you guys about some favourites. So who wants to kind of throw one in first? John, have you got anything that comes to mind at the forefront?
Oh, I've got loads.
Of course you have.
I'm looking at my list.
John, just so you know, we're going to do a whole Disney section covering the Marvel and Star Wars ones, and Joel can sit that out, because normally every time I hear you talk about that, it's like you've watched Miss Marvel, and I watch all of them as well, but yeah.
We can have there's an interesting conversation to be had about those shows, I think.
Well, I've written in my notes, Nerd Corner.
Let's start with Nerd Corner. Let's start how we mean to go on, because I've had mixed feelings on, so the ones I've watched this year have been Miss Marvel, Moon Knight, Obi-Wan and Andor, I think. Was Boba Fett this year? It was last year, wasn't it?
I think it started on Boxing Day last year, I want to say. So I think it did run
into
this year.
Well, maybe that was into this year as well.
But let's be fair, with all due respect, I don't think it's ending on anyone's shows of the year list.
Well, that's the weird thing I want to say. I'm only halfway through Andor, and it's not clicked properly with me yet. Not in the way that Boba Fett did and Obi-Wan. I enjoyed both of them, and I'm determined, I'm convinced. It may be because I'm so sold by social media and the tastemakers, but I'm convinced that by the end of Andor, it will be in my TV shows of the year. And it'll be the best. But for some reason, the first few episodes, I'm enjoying it. I can tell it's good. But for some reason, I guess it's the familiar characters of Obi-Wan and Boba Fett that it was an instant easy, right, I know who these people are, let's get excited.
So I totally agree. Andor, I think, fingers crossed, touch wood, will get to that point. Because I agree. About three or four episodes in, I was like, it's good. Like you say, it's objectively well made. It feels real in a way that maybe some of the other Star Wars stuff has felt a little bit green screeny at times.
Yeah.
But I also agree with you that lots of people are like, oh, finally Star Wars for adults. And it's like, but Star Wars is for families. It's fine. Like, that's cool. Like, it's fine. You're allowed to like Star Wars because people throw lightsabers around and there's like, you know, a big bear that goes, like, that's Star Wars. Yeah. So
no one's going, finally, My Little Pony for adults. At last.
But that being said, Andor is Star Wars for adults. Like, anyone under the age of like 12 is going to be like, you know, where's the blasters and the lightsabers and stuff. But it does get really good and it is incredibly well written. It also is a source of one of my sort of random like shout outs for the year, which is an actor called Alex Ferns, who was in Andor. He was in The Devil's Hour and he's in The Batman, but he's best known as Trevor from EastEnders.
Yeah. He was also in Chernobyl.
Yes, he was.
I'm obsessed with my adding a Nikesh Patel on the podcast, who's in The Devil's Hour. And I had a big nerd out on Alex because he's popping up in so much stuff and he's so good. And the first time you realise it's Trevor from EastEnders, it's so exciting.
And you've spoken on podcasts in the past, like about this idea of, you know, EastEnders is a training ground, and you know, you've got stuff like Himesh Patel who came out of EastEnders. Mm-hmm. And it's taken him a little while to sort of get, maybe he's been doing theatre and stuff, you know, apologies for my ignorance, but you know, it's been a little while, but it's, you know, it still proves that incredible actors come out of those soaps.
Do you want to know the first time I looked over and saw him and went, that's Trevor from EastEnders? It was on my first day on set on Taboo. He was in Taboo as nice. Well.
No
and
way.
He was in this court scene. It was the first scene I did with me and Stevie Graham. And he was killing it and just having a really good time. And it took me a moment and then it clicked. I was like, holy shit, it's Trevor from EastEnders. But yeah, completely worthy shout out there, because who would have thought?
How many projects do you think a soap actor has to do before they stop being a person from EastEnders? Because I think there's something about soaps. I feel like we talked about this recently. They're so intrinsically part of like the British consciousness.
Yeah.
That you are forever that person from a soap, right? I don't think there's any level of success you could achieve.
I've not even told you this, right? At this point, we were meant to have recorded our drunk cast for this year, but we've postponed it because Chris isn't drinking. I've got a section in the new drunk cast that I've just straight stolen from the Dream Factory. And it is discussing, for example, who's more famous, Alfie Moon or Peter Parker? And
in the UK, it's Alfie Moon, hands down.
It's so good, Cat Slater or Beyonce. It's fucking tough. I've got a whole list of them in my notes because it is. It's ridiculous how the weird part that soaps play in British culture and how that isn't really a thing in loads of other countries.
Yeah.
I think if you're like Barry from EastEnders level famous, I think he could win an Oscar and it'd still in the UK be known as Barry from EastEnders.
There's nothing you can do after that point to not be Barry from EastEnders. It's probably, I don't know what the ratio is to like your fame versus how much you've earned and what your lifestyle is. It must be quite annoying because I imagine a lot of soap stars live a relatively normal life in terms of what they can do and afford, and but they are incredibly famous. Like, you know, a lot of soap stars will just be walking the aisles of Tesco and that's just where they shop and that's their local supermarket. But they, they're more recognisable than if Beyonce was in the dairy aisle of Tesco, right? Which is a mad thought.
I think the key is maybe that you have to be in those shows young, because Himesh Patel is one that he was in EastEnders for years, but I don't think people really twig. And he was obviously in Tenet, Station 11, is it? Or Station 7? Station 11, isn't it? Which was astounding, but really another one, really hard to find over here because it was on Stars a weird Play. Extra bit of Prime.
Which John is the only person in the UK paying for.
Me and John are the only people in the UK paying for. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed Station 11. It was amazing. But yeah, I think because he's a grown-up now and he's got a beard, so maybe it doesn't...
That's the trick.
He gets away with it, but yeah.
Yeah, and there's another guy who... There's a couple, you're right. If they're young, hunky guys generally. So there's the guy in Warcraft who's, I can't think of his name, but he was in EastEnders for a bit. And there's one of the guys played Angel in the X-Men movies.
Right.
But also they're not famous enough that they're like Barry from EastEnders, for example. Wait, so in terms of your nerd corner stuff, so you really liked all of the ones you saw, the Marvel stuff you're not so sure about?
No, I loved Miss Marvel and Moon Knight. For such different reasons. Like Moon Knight, I just thoroughly enjoyed all of it. It didn't feel like a Marvel thing. It felt so odd. It felt like it was nice to hear that it was reasonably successful, because I was watching it feeling, well, this is only for me. No one else, this doesn't feel like it's going to be popular at all. And then Miss Marvel, I just thought, I was speaking recently with Ruth Madeley in an episode that's coming out next year, who was in Years and Years and numerous other things, and she's got spina bifida and she does a lot of talks and activism about representations. And one of the big speeches she did recently was in association with Disney. And I think that Disney are a really good example of trying really hard on the representation front, and they don't always get it right. Like there's numerous times that they just fuck it up and get it wrong, but they try really hard. And I think Miss Marvel was an example of them getting it right. I thought it was such a beautiful representation of bringing Muslim culture into the Marvel universe as such, but it feeling completely natural and normal and not alienating and not kind of tokenistic or any of that kind of thing. Yeah. I thought it was great.
It's like the specific is universal. It's almost like the more specific you go into family relationships, the more like... That obviously couldn't be further away from my life, but at the same time, I immediately sort of understood the analogues and was like, that's one of the quickest, like, that episode within the first, I think, half an hour, they introduce the family and you're like, yep, got it, understood, love them all, brilliant. And that's really just really clever writing, isn't it?
Yeah, I completely agree. So was there anything else that you loved or weren't sure on in that?
I would say believe that, it's hard, I don't want to overhype it, but I would say believe the hype on Andor. I do think it, by the end of it, you will be there for it. And then these are sort of outside of Disney Plus, but they're in the nerd world, sort of, or the fandom world more generally. So Peacemaker, which was brilliant, really fun. you know, now James Gunn is the sort of head of DC. I'm very excited to see what, you know, goes on going forward with them.
And I really like how he's handling all of that. Like, there's never been someone in that position who's being as transparent. Yeah, like, he's regularly just doing tweets like going, look, here's where we are on that. And we don't know about that. And I've only been in for a month. Like, I love how he's handling the most hard to handle fan base. A fan base who are going to be angry at everything. And the general consensus tends to be is shut down all communication and then just throw a new product at them. And he's going the complete opposite. He's having those interactions and engaging in that dialogue, which I don't know if you can win that battle, but I love the way he's approaching it so far.
100%. And then the other one is, I think, Joel, this might be vaguely on your list, The Boys, Series 3.
Yep, brilliant.
It's great, isn't it? It just keeps coming back and it's just, yeah, it's astounding. Although The Boys comes under that. I did a tweet recently saying that I can be waiting for months on end excited about a new series of a show I love. And then within 10 minutes of the first episode, I realise I don't remember anything of the previous series. And The Boys and Succession are ones for this, because I would put both of them in my TV shows of the year. Right now, without doing any research, can't tell you a single thing that happened in either of those series. I know all the characters. Right at the moment, can't place a thing that happened other than the Willy bit. But that was... You know,
you're not forgetting that in a hurry, are you? Well, that's interesting you say that. So, like, my top three picks of the year, I went back for this episode, I went back and watched the finale of all three.
Brilliant.
So that I can remember exactly how I felt. Because you're right, I feel like when I thought of the shows that I'd love this year, I just mostly remember how I felt watching them than maybe specifics about the show.
I think it is the nature of the streaming, binge watching nature now, whereas it used to be spread out over weeks. Mm. We do have a show that we adore, but we devour it in a weekend.
Yeah.
And then move on to the next one and go, yeah, I loved that, but that was a weekend. That was, you know.
The great thing about The Boys as well is a lot of these shows, particularly the sort of the Disney Plus stuff, and they all often say in promotion, like, oh, it's a film broken up into 6 half-hours or into 4-hour-long episodes. With The Boys, it's very much a TV show. Like, it's got the big budget, it's got the effects and stuff. But at the end of each episode, there is a big old cliffhanger. There is reason to watch that next episode. It really feels like you get the sort of, you know, set up conflict resolution in each episode within itself, but still building up to that, like, sort of overarching arc, which I really, really love about The Boys.
How do you feel about the fact that these kind of shows are always going to be overlooked come award season? Because that performance as Homelander from Tony, is it Tony Starr? Is that the same, or am I thinking of Tony Starr? Anthony Starr, yeah. It's astounding. And series after series, it just gets better and better and better. And it's so nuanced, but it's so big, but so small. Do you know what I mean? It's got everything. It's this huge character, but there's so much nuance. But that's not going to get a peep come award season. And it feels, there is a weird thing with superhero stuff that it's kind of, it's like, again, as Britt Goldstein talks a lot about, comedy gets ignored a lot in kind of critics, because it's not, it has to be drama to be an award-worthy, you know, show.
Yeah, I've often wondered that about superhero stuff, but I guess it's beyond that even, isn't it? Isn't it like big popcorn fun stuff is generally overlooked for the awards?
I guess so.
You know, like...
Yeah, horror as well a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I don't know if it's sort of viewed as more disposable maybe, or not as timeless, or I don't know. I think Homelander's performance is one of the best on TV for the last few years, definitely. Yeah, he's amazing.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
You've read the comics a bit, haven't you?
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things about... Oh, you've read it as well?
Well, I was going to say, actually, I read the comics, Pip, because you recommended them on this podcast maybe like 5 years ago, something like 6 years ago. And I went and bought them because of that and got into it.
They're amazing. In the first 30 or so episodes, I had Garth Ennis on, who's the creator
That's probably why I went and got them, yeah.
They're amazing. They're absolutely fantastic. And he gets... more, or at the time, he would get more love for Preacher, which I also loved, and I loved the TV series. But The Boys was always the one that I felt was the just a perfect comic book. And I think the thing I love about both of those TV adaptations, which again, speaking, going back to comic book fans being impossible to please, I love that they go off on different storylines and different approaches, because my outlook has always been the comic books are the perfect telling of that story. I don't need just a moving image version of that. I've got that story and it's been done perfectly. So sure, have a few bits of it, but as long as you're getting the essence of the characters, I want to see new stories and I want to see new angles and going off in different directions rather than just, you know that comic, here it is acted
yeah.
out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? That's so true.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but in the comics, so the for anyone who hasn't watched it, the premise of Homelander is essentially what if Superman was a sociopath? But in the comics, it's more pure evil, whereas in the TV show, maybe it's partly performance and writing, but he's a quite sad character, which I've heard isn't so much in the comics, which is amazing.
Yeah, you're right. And I think the angle, and this could just be my view of humans, is I think the angle is more what if Superman was real?
Yeah.
Because I think regardless, it would just be a nightmare. As we've seen, power doesn't tend to go down great. Shout out to, I mean, all of our governments, Elon Musk, everyone else. It doesn't tend to end well. Yeah. But exactly that. And I think for it to have an almost, you know, endless potential series-wise, having that kind of nuance definitely makes it far more interesting. Also, in the comics, in this series, we started to get Butcher and everyone having the V and having the powers. Mm-hmm. That was the whole premise of this series. So I love the fact they did two series building up to that.
Because that's like book one of the comics, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the whole point of it. It's the people, these people who are trying to police the superheroes. So yeah, I've enjoyed that they've gone, no, there's no rush to get to that. That's something we can build to.
On the nerdy shows, I would say that up until about this time last year, I was on top of all of them. And something has happened. I said, like, John and I would be able to talk about all of the latest Marvel and Star Wars releases. And I felt like if you missed out on them for a few months, you are so far behind now. With Star Wars, I don't really know where it happened. There's something happened with me and Marvel where I watched Spider-Man No Way Home. And that almost felt like an endpoint to me in Marvel media.
Yeah.
I thought it was so brilliant that I struggled to then get into any subsequent Marvel shows, films. And something's happened with Star Wars as well, where I really loved The Mandalorian so much and then didn't really like Boba Fett. And I felt like I fell off. And then all of a sudden, there's like five shows across both the brands and like several films. And it feels completely overwhelming. I think it's really hard now to get back up to speed.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Endgame was the end of your subscription, and then you have to choose if you want to subscribe again for another 12 months. Like you've got to the end of this whole years and years of this thing, and you can kind of then go, right, if I step out now, then that's fine. If I continue, I'm committing to, and what it turns out to be, a lot more. Because there's also going to be TV shows in there and everything else. But yeah, well, what's on your list, Joel? What would you like to throw into the mix?
So I would say I've got three shows that I would say are my shows of the year. There is a big caveat over this is that I haven't watched series two of White Lotus because they've
finished that just
during
before
the World
we started
Cup.
This.
They've basically released it during the World Cup. And so I'm waiting till
behavior.
Pretty poor from them, right? So as soon as that's over, White Lotus is happening. So White Lotus might creep into this list.
Yeah.
I would say my favorite show of the year. It's interesting we talked about Apple earlier and having a hit show on Apple, because I think this year, especially Apple for me, is like now the high watermark, like the highest quality shows are coming out of Apple. And my show of the year is Severance.
I knew you were going to say that, and I feel so awkward because Severance, it's another one that feels like it's specifically targeted at me. But for some reason, I watched the first couple of episodes and it didn't quite click, and I need to go back to it.
You do need to go back to it. I think I was in a good spot.
It's one of them where it's just
I wasn't watching
anything
else.
I'm watching going, this is amazing, but I had no rush. That was it. I had other things. And
exactly,
you know, when you have that realization, if it's a weekly type thing or just when you're sitting down, you've got a few options, you know, the one you're keen to watch. And White Lotus is a prime example of that. I have been watching this, but where I've been binging other things where it's weekly, If White Lotus is on my Skybox, that's the first thing I'm watching out of all the things on there. And then it's whatever next.
I think I was in a good spot where I wasn't watching anything else and it took me a couple of episodes to get into it. But then I was in... you can't really talk too much about it without starting to give away the plot. But basically, Adam Scott's in the lead role and he works for this suspicious company, mysterious company. And when he goes into work, he gets in a lift and his brain is severed so that his work life and home life are completely separate, and he's unaware of either.
And he's kind of agreed
And he signed up to it.
Isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he signed up to it.
Because again, I just love as a concept that, because I'm sure we've all worked in jobs, and we don't have to name any of them. I'm sure we've all worked in jobs where we'd like to not think about it at all as soon as we leave the office. And the beautiful idea of that, of your work life exists and then you leave and you don't think about it, you can switch off completely and all that. So it's a genius idea on that respect. But then the way it's made and shot and written is...
It looks
even more
incredible.
It's
got a real sort of 60s, 70s sci-fi feel to it. It's directed by Ben Stiller.
Inspired a lot by a few computer games from what I've heard. On Twitch now, a lot of the big gamers have loved it because of the references or seemingly stylistic influence of certain computer games. So,
and as you'd imagine, it all sort of starts to fall apart and blend in, and you know, the two halves of the brain start to meld a little bit and people's reasons for being in there become clear. And it's a show, I haven't had a show like this in years and years and years, where I was begging my friends to watch it so that I had people to talk to about it. And I was, I think it was being released weekly, and I was deep in the subreddits of this show, like for fan theories and conspiracy theories. I was watching it the second it was on Apple TV, and
love it.
Mates in WhatsApp groups were just like, well, did you see the time that clock was set to? And it's weird because this guy on Reddit has posted this 3,000 word, you know, conspiracy about the way that he's eating a sandwich and stuff that, to that level. I was just fully immersed. And the finale of it,
love it.
I was like on my feet for the last two episodes. Like, I'm shouting at the TV on my feet, which I can't think of the last time a series, like not since maybe the final episode of something like Breaking Bad, have I been on my feet, out of my seat, you know, with what's going on. Like, I'm so excited for the next series. I think it's basically a perfect show. It's definitely my show of the year. It's so
I need
good.
To finish it. I need to finish it. Well, before we go on to more of yours, I said, we'll keep going around in circles a little bit. I've got two that I think are fighting it out for my show, or three. Three, same as you really, Joel, that are probably my shows of the year, and then a load that I think were great. But one of them I ended up binging quick because of exactly what you were saying. My brother watched it and he had no one to talk to about it. And he was like, please, can you just watch it? And it's The Bear.
I really need to watch this? The Bear. I haven't seen The Bear.
Honestly.
I have seen it, Pip.
It's amazing, right? It's just such an astounding bit of writing. All of the actors in it, I wasn't familiar with. I know the lead guy was in the American version of Shameless, but I wasn't familiar with him at all. And for those who don't know, it's a guy who goes from working in a Michelin star restaurant, the best restaurant in the world, supposedly, or in the country, and then comes back to take over his brother's sandwich place, essentially, in Chicago. Because his brother's passed away, and it's amazing, right?
Oh yeah, and it's got two of the most stressful half hours of TV I've seen. The first episode, and I think it's maybe the fourth episode. It's towards the end. There's an episode where everything goes tits up.
I'm sure it's the second from last, isn't it? Where it's towards that end, and it's just it's weird how these things happen, because this will have been being made at the same time Boiling Point was being made, which was one of my films of recent years, and the stress of that is absolutely astounding. And it's weird. Like, I always remember when The Raid came out, and it was the same year that Dread came out. And Dread was an amazing film that got overlooked because it was just essentially exactly the same as The Raid, except with Judge Dredd. But they were happening at once. So no one was ripping anyone off or copying anyone. But yeah, I just think performance-wise, script-wise, and just as John's touched upon, the directing of these episodes, it said, to build the tension, to get it all to where it is just, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, and it's one of those, again, I've already said this, but it's one of those, Miss Marvel, but in a totally different way. It's one of these things where pretty quickly, there's not loads of like background work on these characters. A lot of the backstory isn't revealed until quite late into the show, but it doesn't matter because you know these characters, you like these characters. And even the most annoying characters, you sort of want them all to succeed. It's just, it's just incredibly well written. It's also weird that, like, it's one of these shows that sort of slips between genre sort of cracks. And so it's sort of being pitched as a comedy. And there are definitely some really funny moments, and there's a lot of humour in it. But it's also just like a really tense drama at times as well.
Yeah, it's really, it's so watchable. Again, I love a 20-30 minute show. I love a 20-30 minute podcast. I love a 20-30 minute show, guys. It all fits. Well, before I move on from that, I'm going to throw the other one that's battling for number one top spot in, because no one seems to have seen it, so I can mention it quickly and we can move on. Have either of you watched Babylon Berlin?
No, I hear you talk about it on the podcast all the time. I think I watched the first episode because it started a long time ago, right?
It started a few years back, yeah. I think it started maybe 2019 and the third season came out a month or so ago. And it's just amazing. It's a German show set, I think it's kind of in between the two wars. And it's just about a police department in Berlin. And it's really done in a very kind of noir way. And it's always a bit kind of murder mystery, kind of solving things. There's always a one kind of story arc that's going through and the main detective is trying to figure that out. But then there's a load of other bits along the way. And just, we've touched a few times upon characters that you instantly connect with. And the two leads in this are just two of the most watchable characters, and weirdly, because of the era, there's a lot of dancing and it's nice. Fucking beautiful. It's so watchable. It makes you want to be dancing in the I guess 20s or 30s or I'm terrible with history, so I've probably got terrible dates wrong there, but yeah, it's amazing. And it, and that's another one that's got one or two scenes that your jaw's just on the floor with how they've done this. So that's a big recommend for me. I know in America, and because I binged most of it when I was filming in Canada. I know it's on Netflix out there, but over here it's Sky and Now TV. But yeah, can't recommend it enough. I really think it's bloody astounding. But John, what would you like to throw in?
I'd like to give a little shout out to The Lazarus Project, which was on Now as well, written by friend of the show. Is that fair to say, Pip?
Big friend of the show. And honestly, a dude that's helping me so much with a script I'm working on at the moment. It's weird because Joe Barton wrote Geary Hadji, which was one of my TV shows of recent years. I think it's amazing. I raved about it. And then it turned out that a couple of my songs were on the Mood playlist for it that were sent out to all the production. So me and Joe kind of buddied up then. And The Lazarus Project, and I'll put in this discussion as well, The Bastard's Son and The Devil Himself, which is another one written by Joe Barton on Netflix. They're both on my list. But yeah, The Lazarus Project is... I love that Groundhog Day has essentially become a genre.
Yeah. It's amazing. Groundhog half year.
Yeah. So it's a weird sci-fi type, a big concept sci-fi, right? So the conceit is there's a date that these people can reboot to at any point if they haven't changed history in the way they want to change it. Is that kind of right? So if a horrible, a big terrorist attack happens, as long as the people who are in charge of this are alive, they can reboot back to that date.
Yeah.
And then try and solve it. But obviously that wipes out everything that's happened.
I'm worried we've made it sound more convoluted than it is. It is a really simple, it is a really simple concept. And it's really good. And it's got Papa Asadeu. I've not said that right.
Papa Asadeu. Yeah.
Thank you. In the lead role, who's just, he's just on a roll, that guy. Like,
it's amazing.
Ever since he was on I May Destroy You, there are certain people. I tweeted about this actually the other day, Pip, and you liked it, about Jonathan Majors. Like, the first time I saw him in The Last Black Man in San Francisco, yeah, and Papa Asadeu in I May Destroy You, they're just people. They're not playing the main character, mm-hmm, but you're just like, you cannot take your eyes off them as like performers. And yeah. Papa's just amazing.
I completely agree. And to give a mention on The Bastard Son and The Devil Himself, because I'd recommend it, even though it's just been announced it's not got a second series. It's kind of a young adults thing, but it gets dark and nasty. So I'm not sure how young the adults have to be. But it's a witches type thing, but it's witches kind of in the real world and kind of... And there's just these three characters that become kind of the main three. And there's never been three characters I want to hang around with more. They're just such... It's so beautifully written, and there's such a... It does what loads of good shows are doing at the moment, that it really doesn't work too hard to define or put boundaries or lines down on friendship or if it's friendship or romance or whatever else. And they really do really good ways of just drifting in between all these things and it feeling really natural and beautiful. So, yeah. I'd put both of them in, they're both on my list. But yeah, The Lazarus Project, I just thought it's such a great concept. And I would say at least once a week, I find my mind drifting to try and come up with the next Groundhog Day type concept that can then become a thing, as kind of the Matrix has become a thing, that if it's the, you know, there's a lot of stuff where it's, you know, a fake reality and so on and so forth, and Groundhog Day with Happy Death Day to You, and all these, there's loads of little films and things like that. And
Palm Springs was one of my films of the
Palm Springs, Russian Doll, all of these amazing things that are basically, it's a Groundhog Day idea. It's
like, where, well, if we've gone from a day to 6 months, maybe you need to go the other way, Pip. Maybe you need to like half an hour. Each episode is 30
so
minutes.
Stressful.
Each episode is 30 minutes.
10 it's minutes, the, and it's just the same minutes. Argument, and you keep fucking it up.
You're just trying to leg it across town in 10 minutes.
Yeah. No, let's try again.
And on Lazarus, well, firstly, was it the bastard son and the devil himself?
Yeah.
Best title for a show of the year, I'd say.
That's what I think is interesting, because it was on Netflix for a couple of weeks. And again, I know, because I knew when the script was being developed, it was originally called Half Bad. And then when it came out, it was called this. And I said exactly that, the best name of a TV show of the year. Halfway through, a couple of weeks into its release, its name changed on Netflix from The Bastard Son and the Devil Himself to Half Bad. And then a subtitle of The Bastard Son and the Devil Himself. So I wonder if they felt that maybe low viewing figures were because of the slightly edgy, it's an intense title and it's meant to be a young adults type thing. So maybe parents were a bit, oh no, not sure if you're watching the Bastard program.
And not to rub salt in the wound of that show, but the good news is Lazarus Project does have a second series.
Which does have a second series. Relief. And I think they've just wrapped on it, I think.
Oh,
could
amazing.
Be wrong, but yeah. Fun fact, I don't know which role, but Joe Barton had me in mind for a role in the Lazarus Project, but it clashed with Debris, which, again, spoiler alert, not only didn't get a second series, didn't even get released in the UK. So my annoyance levels are high when I then watched the Lazarus Project. Was like, well, this is amazing, and it's clearly going to be a long-term thing. But yeah, amazing show.
Oh, man.
Joel, what else is on your list?
Yeah, so I've got another one. This is another Apple TV smasher.
Look at you.
He's not sponsored.
Sure. I'm not spot. What I would give to be on the Apple gravy train. This is Bad Sisters. So
Bad Sisters, yes.
Sharon Horgan wrote, stars in, is amazing, is a genius. It's about five sisters that live in Ireland, and one of the sisters' brother-in-law dies, and it's maybe somewhat suspicious. So an insurance firm are investigating the circumstances of this guy's death. And it's told through flashbacks to kind of 6 months-ish previous. And you learn of the sisters' different relationships with this brother-in-law and their various like motivations for wanting him to die. And it is fucking brilliant. It's properly dark comedy. Everyone in it is amazing. The guy that plays the brother-in-law is, I'm going to completely...
Klaus Bang,
it. Yeah. Like, just plays a dickhead so well. Like, this man has played Dracula, but this is the most evil he's been in TV. Like, he is so despicable and awful. You know, there's no... We're talking about the Anthony Starr playing Homelander with a bit of heart in there. There's just that. No, not at all. Like, this guy is the worst man in the world, and you want him to die. The whole way through the series, you want this guy to die. And you just are waiting and waiting and waiting. And there's so many twists. There's, you know, near misses. And he sort of holds something over all of the sisters. And they all have, like I say, various motivations for wanting to do it. Everyone's brilliant. Michael Smiley's got a cameo. Well, not even a cameo, like a recurring role as kind of like a slightly nosy but lovely neighbor who gets wrapped up in it. Yeah, cast is amazing. It's such a good show. I was just demolishing episodes of this when they came out. It's so good. So
I love
good.
It. You know when like Scorsese or James Cameron or whoever moan about people don't watch films how they're meant to be watched, like they watch them on a phone or whatever else. I'm not sure Bad Sisters was meant to be watched through Gogglebox, but that's how I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I have loved watching it on Gogglebox. I've had a few series like that though that I've watched for, oh, that looks good, and then I haven't got round to watching it, and then each week I've seen a bit more, and then you go,
yeah, yeah,
it's not really worth me watching now. I've kind of you've given me too much, so I fucked up there. But it looks amazing. I've heard nothing but good things.
I've done two episodes. I did two episodes last night because I was trying to fill in some gaps in my knowledge, and my main takeaway is he is so horrible.
He does it so well.
He's brilliant.
It's really good. And I think, like, not to jump ahead, but I'm going to give you my third one now as well, because there's a theme. Like, I think it's a massive year for Irish TV and film, because series 3 of Derry Girls is my is third on my list. I think it's the best comedy that came out this year. I think the writing on it is so sharp and so good, and it's a show that kind of like serves almost as a history lesson if you have grown up with a British education. It's like you'll learn more about the Troubles and the Good Friday Agreement watching Derry Girls than you will if you've been to school in England. Yeah. It's really funny. I think what comedy does, like this does so well, is that it's both about something so specific and so universal at the same time. So it is very specifically about girls at a Catholic school in Derry in the 90s. But it's universally about the teenage experience and everything that is, right? So your entry point is, oh yeah, I've been a teenager. Everyone's been a teenager. And that's probably why internationally it's such a massive hit. But then it is very specifically about this period of time. And it's so good. And, you know, Scorsese said this week, didn't he, this, like, his favourite show, this is the thing he's watching. So
I saw a few of the cast excitedly retweeting that.
Yeah, so if Scorsese's backing me up, I'm pleased with that. Yeah, I think it's such a brilliant, brilliant show, and I'd encourage everyone to watch it. I love it so much.
Great
it's
show.
So good.
Well, kind of linking on from that, the third one that I was saying I had three that are battling for the show of the year, I guess, and loads of honourable mentions, but Big Boys,
Channel 4 show
with the lad from Derry Girls in it.
Yeah.
And I just thought, it's the story of a mate of mine, Jack Rook. So I was all ready to be, I'm biased, I'm on side. But what they actually did with that show just blew me away. I thought the writing was so beautifully delicate and gentle, but hilarious and kind of unflinching at the same time. And watching Jack start the year unknown and then come out the year being referred to as the new Michaela Cole and being raved about by Russell T. Davis, who, if you're writing queer drama, queer comedy, there's no one you want praising you more than Russell T. Davis, because the man's astounding at it. So, yeah, that just blew me away this year. I thought it's fantastic. It was another one that I think felt a little bit the bingeable thing. It felt like it had a couple of weeks of being talked about as the best thing that's ever happened, and then everyone moved on quite quickly.
I actually, to go back to what you just said a minute ago, Pip, I have started the show, but I saw the big dramatic, well, not dramatic, the big heartfelt moment via Gogglebox.
There we go.
So I cried along, I cried along with a bunch of strangers on sofas across the country.
Yeah, yeah. It's mad, isn't it? Well, and another one that I wanted to put in with that, because it's something that I watched in prep for this, because I did a similar. The rest of my year is going to be just getting rid of any films I haven't watched for my Films of the Year podcast. But there was one show that I'd not heard many people talk about, but those that had all felt it was one of the best things of the year. And it's another Channel 4 thing, or maybe it's only on All 4 actually. And it was Somewhere Boy. Are you familiar with this at all?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
Really? It was a really weird one, because as I said, my brother recommended it and I thought, I've not really heard of this. In fact, I had someone pitched for the podcast.
How much telly is your brother watching?
He's watching, he's really selective. So it's kind of, if it's coming up with a strong recommendation. But yeah, I'd had someone from the show pitched to me. So that's the only reason I'd really heard of it. And it's about a lad whose mum dies and his dad has brought him up telling him that the outside world is all monsters and his mum was killed by a monster. So he's never been outside. And then in the first episode, his dad dies and the kid has to go and live with his aunt, who he'd never met, and his cousin, who he'd never met. And it's really beautifully done. It's really strange and odd, the lead performance is absolutely amazing. Like you can complete, like it feels like they've found an actor who has never seen the outside world. Yeah. And it's like, he's really amazing performance. But yeah, that's another one that's, I think it's 6 or maybe 8 episodes, but 20 to 30 minutes long, if that. So yeah, I really think it's a bit of a sleeper on there. Really nicely done, and really, again, another one that's a really weird concept and idea, mm-hmm. but then gets really human in different places. And it gets really dark as well. Like, it's not this light, fluffy, oh, it's a weird kid. It's like this kid, in ways, is understandably fucked up from all of this. So, yeah, worth a watch. I mean,
that's, hopefully that's what this chat's all about, is, you know, we haven't watched everything between the three of us, but yeah. there's stuff that we, you know, you as a listener haven't heard. I haven't watched, hopefully a couple of them will sort of add to your list. And if you have watched something that we haven't mentioned, don't have a go at us. Just let us know.
Just let us know. Check it out. Yeah. Give us a shout. What else have you got, John? What would you like to throw in?
Oh, by the way, for the record, I know you said you finished White Lotus and Joel has yet to start it and he's very excited. I'm 4 episodes in, and even 4 episodes in, I think that's probably one of the best TV shows of the year. It's amazing.
The first series did that. It kind of just turned up and went, oh, this is an amazing show, by the way, and was just, yeah. And it's continued on that. I've got a theory that one of the key themes of White Lotus is people having surprisingly good bodies. Because the first series had the two younger Instagrammy type girls judging the more plain wife until she took off her... until she got into a bikini, and then they were all like, oh, wow, you're bodied up. This one, Will Sharp, previous guest, good Lord. I can't believe I let him keep his shirt on for our podcast. If I'd known, he's amazing. And there's a few other people along the way that you're like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. So, yeah, it's a surprisingly good body show.
Yeah, I don't think when Mike White is writing these scripts, he's thinking, how do I get more surprisingly well people in this show?
Isn't the story with White Lotus that he'd had it written for quite a long time and it hadn't been picked up, and then they were looking for like something they could shoot in one sort of location during COVID, and they made that first series? I feel like Mike White wrote it quite a long time ago.
It's amazing.
Yeah, because he wrote School of Rock, right? And he's also... Yeah. Isn't the mad thing about Mike White that he's a massive reality TV fan and he's been on Survivor in America and stuff?
Really?
And we're not talking like Survivor, like we're not talking like 15 years ago. I think it was like a few years ago he was on Survivor.
Yeah, he was not on the celebrity version of the show. Like, he's like a Survivor super fan and did the show.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Pip. I think the second series might be better than the first one.
Yeah.
From where I'm sat. Yeah. And what I can tell you for free, Joel, is the theme tune is similar, but oh my God, does it go hard this time.
Yeah, it goes hard.
Yeah, I'll reveal it here, as there's only you guys and the listener, but I did kind of a subtweet the other day saying there's one show that I absolutely love, but I cannot fucking stand the theme tune.
No!
White Lotus. I can't handle it, it does me in. I hate it, John.
I think it's sort of like a stressful banger, and that's sort of the vibe of it to get you into the show. It's like a little bit stressful. I've got a few here. One I'd really like to shout out is Slow Horses have released 2 seasons this year, so that's on Apple TV.
I've watched the first season, haven't started the second season yet, but the first one was amazing.
Yeah, and it's sort of this indication of this conversation. The theme of this conversation overall is like, Gary Oldman is in a TV show and it's not the biggest thing in the world. Like, that's where we're at with TV now. There's another show that I started. Hopefully no one else is going to bring this up. The Old Man, which is Jeff Bridges, is in a thriller on Disney Plus. No one's talking about it, but it's just the caliber of like performers and directors and, you know, writers working in telly. It's just unbelievable.
I've not watched it. I saw it. I saw a poster for it. It was called The Old Man. I sent it to Stuart Whiffin saying congratulations on the new series. And that's as far as I went. I moved on with my life.
If Jeff Bridges is playing me, I will be over moon.
Take it.
But yeah, Slow Horses. Again, sort of really funny, but it is also like an incredibly well plotted out sort of...
It's a spy drama, isn't it? It's the people who can't get into MI5, or supposedly
the Renford rejects of MI5.
Yeah. But yeah, I loved it. I watched the first season, and they filmed both seasons together. Like they ran into each other. I had Jack Loudon on the podcast, and I didn't know that. So I'd watched it. I was like, it's amazing. Do you know, have you heard if there's going to be a season two? It's like, we've filmed season two, mate. So yeah, there is.
I think they're filming season three, and I think four's been commissioned. Apple are really committed to this show. And it's based on a series of books as well, which obviously helps that there's ample source material for them to pull from. It's not like they have to sort of come up with a new spy thriller every time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I want to quickly mention, I wanted to throw in a few things that, because these weren't on my list. Again, I did what the bloody awards people do. I did a big list mainly of dramas. Mm-hmm. And there's three things that I think every year are absolutely astounding. And those three things are Taskmaster.
Yep.
Last week, tonight with John Oliver, and Frankie Boyle's New World Order. I think all three of them just come along and do their job year after year. And
this series of Taskmasters an all timer for me. I thought it's so
amazing.
Brilliant. I thought
right?
it was so brilliant. This year's so brilliant. Yeah.
I completely agree. I wasn't sure how John Kearns would be because I saw him at the Fringe just before this, and he spoke about on that how he's not going to have the teeth and the glasses and the wig. And it's like, I sat myself, because again, he's one of the best comedians on the circuit. Yeah, I sat there thinking, well, if he's not got the wig, the teeth and the glasses, is it going to work? what is it? And then the first episode, because he is quite sheepish, I was like, don't know if this is going to work. And by the end, it's like the best Taskmaster contestant ever. Absolutely perfect.
I love the way that they sort of, they get these household names. So you've got your Dara O'Brien, you know, Tick, and then they sort of smuggle in these sort of sweethearts of the comedy scene that everyone who watches live stand-up or goes to Edinburgh knows are amazing, and then put them on this show, and then everyone in the country gets to fall in love with them, like, you know, Mike Wozniak and Fern Brady and stuff.
Yeah. I love it. Well, there's, hang on. I need to turn my Wi-Fi back on because I'm going to throw in a couple more shows here, but they're subtitled shows. And I've just realized I don't know which countries they're from, despite watching many, many series. So one is it Swedish? It is. It's Swedish. A show called Snabbercash on Netflix. Really, really good. It had season two come out a few weeks back. And this 6-part series, and this is going to sound like a weird thing to shout out, but they're really good at casting.
Nice.
Every character in it, I've looked into it more, and a lot of them, it's a bit of a Shea Meadows type thing. A lot of them weren't actors previously and things like that. And it's the Swedish version of The Wire, essentially. It's all about crime and drugs, but it feels so real. And yeah, it's astounding. And then the other one, which is on Apple TV in the UK, apparently, is Blocco 181. And that's an Italian show that's a similar thing. It's about, where have they come over from? It's about a certain, the Wikipedia's in Italian. Of course it is. anyway, it's another one that's just got two or three actors in it who I've never seen in anything. You look up their stuff and they've not done much before. And they're just astounding. And I think the beauty of these streaming services like Apple, like Netflix, is that they're global. And it means that we get, I mean, the easy examples are your Squid Games and your Money Heist and all these things. We get these astounding shows from writers that aren't just American and English, and actors that aren't just American and English. And I think, there's some really exciting stuff. I also wonder, every year, there's at least a couple of foreign language TV shows in my TV shows of the year. Now, I don't know if that's because they're the best or because they have subtitles, I have to give them my undivided attention.
Yeah, I was like that 100%. With Dark, which was an amazing Netflix series.
Almost everything else, even if I'm loving it, I'm glancing at my phone every now and then, or I'm looking around or getting distracted, or my mind's wandering. But Babylon Berlin, Snabbercash, and Blocco 181, all just 100% attention. And I think it's because they're really good, but listeners can correct me on that if I'm mistaken. But
there's got to be an assumption that if they're sort of getting them into another country, we're getting the creme de la creme. We're not getting the sort of standard fare.
You'd think.
Yeah.
You'd think. Well, I mean, I'm going to rattle through a few now and not give any real chat on, but John mentioned The Devil's Hour earlier. I thought that's fantastic. Vigil, I also thought was fantastic. I really enjoyed Sandman, Only Murders in the Building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Welcome to Wrexham. We've not had any kind of reality documentary type things, but I thought that was the most watchable thing in the world. So, and Pistol, I really enjoyed. That was also on Disney, wasn't it? The Sex Pistols TV show that got a bit of criticism because they felt it was played a little bit theatrically. And it's like, have you seen the Sex Pistols? They're the most theatrical cunts in the history of music. Of course it's theatrical and over the top, but yeah. It's been some good stuff this year, guys, and I appreciate you coming on and chatting about it.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us, Pete.
Yeah, I'm coming away armed with a list of things to watch in that Christmas to New Year period. So that's me now.
As a parent of an 18-month-old, I also need to shout out Dougie, Peppa Pig, and Bluey, because I've spent most of my time this year watching those shows.
They're the big watches.
Yeah. So check those out, guys.
Thanks for doing that, John, because I have forgotten to, but they just missed my
They just missed your three. Yeah. I should also mention that a lot my TV, despite this amazing list, is probably down this year, because this year's the year I've got into Twitch, and there's so much amazing creative stuff on there. And just to nerd out to you two, guys, there's a thing going on in the Twitch community I kind of watch a lot of, where people have built a role play server of Grand Theft Auto, right? It's called Quiet City. So everyone in there is role playing as characters.
Wow.
And honestly, it's some of the best drama and comedy I've seen all year. And it blows my mind. They keep asking me to join. I don't think I'm good enough. Like, I watch and I'm like, how are they doing this?
Give me a minor role.
They'll do 4 or 5 hours improvising these stories that just go in all sorts of random directions. And it'll be, when they release like the VOD at the end, it'll be like, it's like this was written by Mike White.
Yeah.
This is like, it's amazing. So
sort of similar stuff. I watched
Twitch.
IGN made a really great documentary about people that are still playing Fallout 76. You know, that quite failed online. It's about 20 minutes long. It's amazing. And about 5 or 10 minutes of the documentary are dedicated to people that have set up a theatre company in Fallout 76.
They
perform Shakespeare, and it runs through the rigmarole of performing Shakespeare in a nuclear wasteland. You know, they have to employ security and stuff. And it's incredible. Like, these community, and they had a real problem with people kind of setting up illegal trades. And so people have inserted themselves as couriers into Fallout 76, and they're acting like just the world, a similar thing, I guess, the world they've built in this game that should be long dead. It's just, I loved it. It's fascinating.
I love the kind of niche areas of creativity that these things can build. And it's weird, because with this Quiet City stuff, like, there was a point where, to keep up on it, I was having to watch probably 4 or 5 hours a day. So it was one of them. It was one of them that I could only really be into it for a week or two, because I was after that I need to check out. And the good thing is most of them will cycle characters, so they'll do one character storyline for a couple of weeks and then another character storyline for a few weeks. So the particular streamers I follow, in particular a guy called Barma, a girl called New Lease of Life, a guy called formerly Brat Damon, now just Brat. But all of these characters, I'd be hoping that at some point soon they switch characters so I can have a reason to stop following the storyline, because it's so insanely engaging. Yeah,
we started this episode talking about soap operas, and you've basically ended the episode talking about the most modern version of a soap opera you could imagine.
A live soap opera playing out. Well, there we go. Thank you very much, guys. And to round things up, where can listeners hear and submit to Dream Factory?
Well, whatever device you're listening to this on, you will also be able to hear Dream Factory on. So just search for it and submit at Dream Factory Pod on socials, at dreamfactorypod@gmail.com. However, I've been the subject of one of the biggest spam attacks of all time. So I get about 45 emails a day that are just claims that I owe some people money. So you could do that. You could tell me I owe you money, or you could send us a film idea.
Yeah.
Either or. And is there anything else either of you would like to plug or mention?
That's it. That's all we've got in our lives.
just sort of send your loved ones a nice message.
Send them a film idea.
Send your loved ones a film idea and tell them they owe you money. Guys, it's been a pleasure listening to you guys all year and then catching up on some TV and stuff. I've got a few things to dig into now, so I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
No worries.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go, buddy. Peace. Oh, no, let's have an outro. In fact, make that the outro. There you go, buddy. Peace. And everyone else. People who are listening now, I was about to say, I normally give a sign-off message that's only for Buddy Peace, the producer, the best producer of podcasts in the world to hear. But I just started to do it and I hadn't recorded an outro yet. So here's the outro. Did you enjoy that? Tell us about the TV shows that you've enjoyed. We didn't get through everything that we loved, but we'd always like to hear more. And go and listen to Dream Factory. As said, I was on their Christmas episode. If that's enough to lure you in, you'll then be addicted because they're amazing. They're great guys and great podcasters. Yeah, have a bloody lovely New Year's Eve, guys. I'll see you all in the new year. As a lot of you know, on New Year's Day, I get up and I go for a walk and I record my Films of the Year podcast. I'll be doing that this year. I look forward to you all joining me on that walk in a way, you know, in a way where you're joining me, but I'm not being joined by you, you know, in that kind of way. Thank you again for a lovely year. You've all been amazing and your support is genuinely always appreciated. I'll see you next year. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.